Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I'm coming at you with a solo episode. I'm going to dive deeper into my experience in Peru, give you a little more details on it and my experience with ayahuasca. And also, if you're watching the video of this, you'll notice that I'm in a booth, like a phone booth, basically. And I'm at WeWork. And, you know, I think I just wanted to mention this because so often we don't start because I don't have the right camera. I don't have the perfect microphone. We have so many bullshit excuses so that we don't have to begin, so that we don't have to be vulnerable. And, you know, this is often the pursuit of perfection actually getting in the way of even greatness. You know, this idea that it all has to be perfect. It's such a lie. But again, it's our way of not having to put ourselves out there. So I hope that my podcast recording in a booth inspires you to hit record wherever you're at. There are so many successful creators, teachers, all that kind of stuff, who are defying all the quote-unquote rules. The rules are what get in the way. You know, like people want real. They want truth. They want honesty. They want vulnerability. They want to witness someone taking a risk. So take that risk. So I went to Peru the end of November and beginning of December. I went for 6 days into the jungle. So I was there for a total of 10 days, 10 or 11. But six of them were spent deep in the jungle in the Amazon. So I landed in a city called Iquitos, and then we caught a boat down the Amazon, about an hour and a half, hour and 45, down this little slim channel off the Amazon. And it was unbelievable. Now, not for people who don't like mosquitoes, because there were a lot of those, and I don't like mosquitoes, but I felt called to this. I did a previous episode talking about how I didn't really, like there was a part of me that didn't want to go. But the reason I knew I needed to go was because it was because I was afraid of what I'd find there, what my experience. I was afraid of what I'd find on ayahuasca, what I'd see, what I'd experience, you know, the unknown. And, you know, I'm not bypassing or plowing through someone's viable concern for experiencing or seeking to potentially think about experiencing a psychedelic. And none of this is medical advice for you to go on your own journeys, but to say that I'm going to share about my journey. And, you know, if you feel inspired or you feel called towards whatever you're feeling called towards, you know, maybe it will have you take that leap. And just maybe you'll actually gain something through my experience where you don't feel the desire. So I learned a lot through it, a ton. One is that all the things I was afraid of about going to a country I'd never been to and being deep in the shticks of the Amazon and, you know, all that kind of stuff was, I mean, my experience was nothing like what maybe my worst case scenario could have been. And listen, I had people around me, people I love who are like, why are you going there? You shouldn't be going there. You're a new father. Da, 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 da. There was a lot of thoughts, a lot of opinions. And listen, if I lived my life based on satisfying the opinions of other people, I wouldn't even be on a microphone right now. I wouldn't have taken the leap from pharma. And so it tells you, you know, like often we can take other people's advice and say, thank you for the care and concern. I appreciate your thoughts. Sometimes we don't though. Like, hey, I don't need your unsolicited thoughts on what I'm doing. So with all that said, get to Iquitos. There is no cell service. Phone is off. Used it a couple times to listen to a podcast, a couple audio books in those 7 days. But I had no connection to texting technology. And for the people who maybe get a little bit of anxiety thinking, what, you're a dad, you didn't have, there was a satellite phone and a phone that Kai could text if there was an emergency. So I really, that was important for me to have, of course. So we get there on a Sunday. And we actually do ayahuasca that night. So before each ceremony, I had prepared intentions and questions. Now, trying to drill down to sort of one main intention, just so we're not all over the place, and also, you know, maybe one or two questions, but not, hey, I have to get the answer to this. This is where I'd like the journey to take me. Prior to doing this, I have an interview that hasn't been published yet, but I did it with Matt Zeman, and he is an expert in the area of psychedelics, and he has a journal to prepare for and to explore things after your journey. And so I got that on Amazon and used that to guide my journey. And I had a notebook where I would just jot like whatever was coming through for me when I was on the journey or when I wasn't. Now, I've done psilocybin before, so I had some idea of what it was like or what it can be like to be on a psychedelic. And my understanding of this experience, what it might be like from talking to other people, is I realized everyone has a different experience. And in some ways, I actually wish I didn't get any advice from anybody in like specifically what their experience was, because I thought it might frame my experience. Now, with all that said, I'd say the overwhelming feedback I got was that it is transcendent, beautiful, transformative, and also hard. And I think that's a great description of it. For me, as I shared on that previous episode about it, I wanted to do it the quote-unquote right way. And that's not a judgment, but rather, if I was going to do it, I want to go to where the medicine is, to where the people who've been working with it for generations, and that's what they do. They operate, if you can believe it, in other realms. And so the shamans, which there were four of them, and there's a master shaman, they are basically, I mean, they're on ayahuasca as well. And so they are in the realms with you, but they're protecting you, working with you, taking care of you if you need it. There's, ayahuasca is considered the excavator of, I mean, I'm using my own word, and I'm sure for those of you who have experience, you might have a different word or a different thought, and that's the beauty of diverse thought, is that it's like the cleaner of psychedelics. And so you often purge like puke or shit, you know, like diarrhea or however it comes out during your experience. It isn't associated with whether you're having a bad one and that's when the excavation occurs and you puke and shit, or you're having a good one. It's indifferent. You can be in the beauty of all of it and still be letting some stuff go. So with all that said, the first night, there's nine of us. We're all laying on kind of cots around a circle in a circular-shaped building that is like a giant hut with thatch roof and mosquito netting around it. And so you can just, the jungle noises are just absolutely incredible. Now, the intention that I set for the first journey was one, to remove all codependencies, to like take the martyr in me and let's just excavate it. Let's get it out. The second intention I had was help guide my path, like help me see my path, like where am I going? What should I do? Essentially was what I really wanted. And just with life, you know, in general, like, where's the direction of my work going? Show me the outcome. Like, where is it? So it's super interesting. I was scared in that first journey of the unknown. Like, what is this going to be like? You have, as I said, all this preparation from other people's experience, but you have not yet done it yet. So my friend who's sitting right beside me, you get served it. There's a blessing, an opening of the ceremony, etc. And then we get served the ayahuasca. It's in a little cup. And, you know, we're sitting beside each other. We look at each other like, all right, let's go. I can't undo this once it's done. And, you know, you're flying all the way there. Like, I didn't show up for nothing. So let's freaking get into it. So down the hatch, lay back down. And I was like, okay, like, what are we going to do? We can't untake it now. And you're just kind of waiting. Now, one of the things that I had said to the plant, which you do go into the jungle, in my experience, we did this, go into the jungle and go get the vine, and you go get the leaves. And so you actually participate in, they ask permission of the plant, and sometimes it says no, said yes. So here we are. Go get it, prepare it, like bring it all back, prepare it, cook it during the whole day, which is so cool. And the other plant that we did was wild garlic. Wild garlic is exactly how you'd think of garlic, in that it tastes like a garlic tea. That's what we were having. And that garlic was a leaf, not a clove. So that was really neat, just to see how brilliant nature is and how it's created this flavor in another place on the planet in a totally different way. So there was this reverent relationship to what I was consuming. That was important to me as well. That it wasn't just stuff I ordered on friggin' Amazon. Not that I'm guessing you can't do that for good reason, but I wanted to make sure that I was in a respectful, reciprocal, reverent relationship with the plant. And so I had said in my intentions, like, please be gentle with me in our introduction. Okay. So first ceremony, beautiful. Really beautiful. I didn't ever puke. I only ever had the digestive end come. And I did have that. The stomach, you know, stuff is like more like a nausea or like cramping. And while I was in it, you know, I'm like, let's go. Like, you can't undo it. So I'm like, let's take it all. Take the codependencies, take the martyr, take the, right? I had a beautiful experience. I felt basically like what might have looked like, although it's hard to put into words what you're visually seeing, a vacuum tube on my third eye, but it was like shooting energy into my head, into my third eye and my body. And that experience was visceral through my body. And we started around 8 p.m. and I start to come down at, I'm guessing it's hard to know exactly time, but I'm going to say around 11-ish. Takes, I'd say for people, maybe anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour and a bit to actually have the medicine start to feel it. And you start to, for me, I started to see light, colors. I started to get visual effects, psychoactive effects, feel it in my body. And apparently some people don't experience any visual stimulus. Some people maybe never experience actually anything. And the thought is that it's all the perfect journey. Like, it's exactly what you needed. And maybe that's because you didn't get it and other people did. And so you long for that experience. You wish you had a different one. So I was mindful of what was possible as that was coming through. But I started to get visual effects. And when I started to come down from this journey, one of the core messages that I'd been hit with is that I was hearing all these other people's experience. Like, they had a harder experience. They were puking. They were like, oh man, that was so insane what I went through. Da 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 da. Right? Like, other people having just a lot of somatic experiences, like shivering, releasing. I didn't have a ton of that. It felt like a beautiful psilocybin experience. But I was sitting there at the end talking to people, sort of talking through each person's experience. And I could tell I wish I'd had a different one. And that's so a framework that my brain can get stuck in, that I'm like wishing for a different experience than the one I have. That I like wish it was more something, different something. And I could see how that trap, and it's interesting because the questions that I asked and the intentions that I had, I certainly felt a release of things like codependency and martyrdom. But really the gift I was getting was that we're not even going to get there because you don't even accept the experience you're having. And I think about how prevalent that can be in my life, that I want something different. I want it better or more organized or less friction or like the discomforts of life, I want to avoid sometimes, which, of course, why wouldn't I? But I noticed this thing coming back about presence. How can I be present to the moment I'm having when I'm wishing for a different moment? And think about how common that is in our experience, that we're like desiring something else other than what's happening. But then we're not accepting what's happening and we're not in the moment. We can't, even if it's not a desirable thing or it's quote unquote a bad thing, we still can't be with all the information because we're wishing we're not there. And so how do you even get direction to navigate the thing you're in if you're not in the thing you're in. Oh, man. I mean, this longing to have had someone else's experience is so common. I remember Carolyn Mace saying that one of the greatest reasons of most people suffering is that they wish for a different childhood than the one they had. And I think it's very similar. It's like, you know, why me? Well, why not you? Actually, if you were selected for it, if that's the perspective we're going to have, which is that's the perspective I choose because the other perspective is not empowering. But if we were selected for that experience to develop some sort of skill set, knowledge, ability, why not you? Like, you're the perfect person for it. How do we know that? Because it happened to you. It happened to me. And then we're like, it happened for us. Okay, well, that's a shift that it seems so simple. And sometimes it feels or can seem like spiritual bypassy shit. And that simple, subtle shift in language starts to make everything that happens in our life at least deliver something for us. And I can understand that that's hard to do with lots of things. And that's also not to minimize the pain of experiences. But we can't change that they happened, but we can change how we orient to what happened. And can we extract everything we possibly can from the experience? In Francis Weller's audio series, The Alchemy of Initiation, he said, alchemy doesn't give a shit about the alchemist. The process of transformation doesn't care about your feelings. And I have to be reminded of this. So I'm thinking after this is all done, you know, this is night one. I'm like, nah, you know, ayahuasca's not that big of a deal. Like that was pretty gentle. I see why people do it. It was beautiful. I had a great, like, transformative psychedelic experience. But like, you know, I could do it again, and it's not. And I was thinking as I was saying that, because I'm sure you're thinking it. I was like, shit, I bet ayahuasca can hear me right now. And of course, ayahuasca's like, oh, you think we ain't shit? Get ready. So the next day, which is a Monday, we drink wild garlic. It's meant to also be the cleanser, so it works with ayahuasca. And these plants, the shamans ask which plants need to be worked with a group for what the group needs. And this was the one. So we have a ceremony, we drink that, and then we have to have a shower because it heats the body. So you have a cold shower and then you go to bed. So day three, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this one. I now have a concept of what this is going to be like. I now have this intention of, okay, I'm going to be with the experience. It's the exact experience I'm meant to have. Every moment is the one I'm meant to have. Can I be fully present to every moment? Can I eat everything on my plate? Can I be with everything? So that was really my practice. Was, I mean, so much like Buddhism, right? It's like, can you be with every single experience, every moment, every breath? Okay. And there's no technology, so there's nowhere to go. Just to be in the moment with the other people. And I drink it. My intention, where should I go? If there's anything to take, take it. And this journey, there's only one way to describe it. It was fucking hard. It was hard. The overall theme of it felt really dark. It felt very shadow. It was hard for me to differentiate between, like, you know, this fear that I'm interacting with a dark entity and this recognition that it could be my own darkness, things that need to be excavated and released and traumas, etc. So the height of this was really quite intense. I'm sweating. I'm nauseous. I feel like I'm going to puke. I feel like I'm going to poop, but, you know, that's not happening, which is really kind of crazy, right? Because you're thinking it creates diarrhea, but this was not happening for me. So there was not a release happening in the height of it. And I was meant to be in it because I got to tell you, man, I was, there's this tobacco that they have called Mapacho, and they recommend smoking it and blowing it on yourself. And it is posited to be protective spiritually, energetically. So I like sit up, my hands shaking. I light this Mapacho. I take not an inhale, but like breathe it into my mouth and then blow it on my body, blow it over my head, blow it into my shirt. As I'm sitting up, Jaguar in my visual like psychedelic experience comes right to my forehead, puts jewels in my third eye, and then swallows me. I lay down and I'm like, oh my God. Like, I could tell I wanted this to end, right? Which I'm sure as you're listening, like, who the fuck wouldn't want this to end? But I was actually thinking, this is the exact experience I'm meant to be having. Okay, what am I here to learn? So to be, you have the psychological ability to recognize you're in an experience and that it's going to end. Now, I'm just speaking for myself, but that to the other people that I was speaking to about it, that was the same conversation. Like, you recognize you're cognitive of the experience, but the experience is highly visual, highly somatic. And, you know, the reason I was so fascinated by ayahuasca, I was asked years ago to do it, didn't feel aligned. But the reason I've shared before, my friend Brandon Collingsworth, very connected to the people in the area that he brings people in Peru. He has a reciprocal relationship with the land, with the people. He leaves the land better than he found it. That's one of the agreements he made with the land. And he's been on the podcast twice. You can look him up. It's called Warrior Retreats. Is there any better feeling in the world than when you crawl into a freshly made bed, especially one that has silky sheets that it feels like a giant hug, like a cuddle fest when you get in? Now, I've been traveling a lot lately, and every time I go to sleep in another bed, I miss my cozy earth sheets. Now, any guest that stays at our house also stays in a bed adorned with cozy earth, and they always wonder, what are the sheets I'm sleeping in? And I gotta tell you, these are the best high-quality sheets that I've ever had the pleasure of sleeping on. And even my wife, Kylie, will agree, there are no other sheets that compare. They're soft, they're silky, and they're so comfortable, and you just melt into them. The reason they're so soft is that they're made from viscose, from bamboo fabrics, which is softer than cotton, and as a huge bonus, is responsibly and sustainably sourced. Now, on top of that, it's temperature regulating, which means it keeps you cool and comfy all night long, and the unbeatable luxurious feel helps turn your bed into the most cozy sanctuary ever. Now, I'm not the only one who's crazy about these sheets. Cozy Earth has been featured on Oprah's favorite list for 5 years in a row. So give their sheets or any of their awesome products a try. They have 10-year warranty on all their products and 100-night sleep test. Try it out for 100 nights, and if you don't love it, you get your money back. But I do know that you're going to love them just as much as I do, and they're offering you, my listeners, a massively generous 40% off discount. That's right, 40% off. Just go to CozyEarth.com and use the code GROVES for 40% off their products. That's CozyEarth.com and use the code, my last name, GROVES, for 40% off. And in being in the experience, I'm here. Like, we didn't come all this way to not be here, but oh my God, it was so hard. And then the journey finishes for most people. Everyone's talking again, like the first night I told you about, but it doesn't finish for me. My stomach is still really going and I'm really feeling it. And there was a lot of, while I was in the between worlds, that's the best way I can describe it, there was a lot of excavation, like I could feel that. And there was a lot of trying to escape the discomfort, and I just laid. I just followed what my body was telling me, which was to keep laying down. I probably had a somatic experience for another 2 hours. There were a few other people who were still having them. And every night, you know, it was sort of different people experiencing the sort of more longevity version. And I finally go to bed, fall asleep because I'm tired, wake up, and I'm like, oh man, I feel like I got hit by a spiritual truck. And I was sharing that with people, but there was like I was still feeling the medicine, you know, lightly in my body. And I was saying to people who I was speaking to about it that, wow, like that was hard. That was hard. And I was thinking privately to myself, I don't think this psychedelic is for me. Like, this is not mine. And I'm not sure I'm going to do the last day. Okay, yeah, I'll figure it out. I'll think about it. I didn't want to do the last day at that moment. But that day I was talking, we were all breaking down our journeys with the shamans, and I was talking to one of the shamans, and I said, that felt really hard. And how do you know if you're dealing with the dark entity or like navigating shadow stuff that needs to navigate, or so protecting your energy versus not? And he said to me that when you feel scared, and this is so applicable to life, but when you feel scared, think of something or someone you love so dearly in your heart. And you'll see, and like these people have done it hundreds and thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but hundreds and thousands of times, right? So this is, they've got experience. But that you'll see the darkness sort of dissipate and sing a song that you really love that will help bring the heart forward, bring you present to the moment. And I was like, damn, that information would have been really good last night. So I thought, what's the song that I could sing that brings me joy? And it was, you know, the end of November, beginning of December. I have lots of positive memories of Christmases. So it was Jingle Bells. That's the first thing that came to me. I know it's crazy and weird and wild and like, what? That's the song? Yep. So I journaled a lot that day. One of the main messages I got from that journey was, you want answers to the future, but you don't even listen to what we tell you now. You don't even do all the things we've guided you towards now, and you want more? Like, why would we give you more? You don't even eat everything on your plate. You don't even do everything that you're guided towards, and now you want more? And I've shared this, you know, in my New Year's episode, that I wanted to share that specific learning because it had to get out. I had to get it to you because it was so important. This idea of like, do you live everything that is happening right fucking now? And most of us is no. And it was true for me. I needed that message because I forget to be in integrity with myself. I need to embrace the learnings and the transformations that are being gifted to me through the experiences I'm having. Now, it made me think of a Rainer Maria Rilke quote, which I want to read to you because it's honestly so profound. I would like to beg you, dear sir, as well as I can, to have patience with everything unresolved in your heart and to try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers, which could not be given to you now because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. Oh, man. How beautiful is that? To have patience with everything unresolved in your heart. To have patience with everything unresolved in your heart. That's hard to do. We want to rush through the grief, the pain, the suffering. But what I love is how he frames it, to love the questions themselves as if they're locked rooms or books written in a foreign language. They are both of those things, aren't they? And don't search for the answers, which could not be given to you now, because they're not being, because you would not be able to live them. Isn't that it? And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Questions guide our lives. And if we want to have a deeper, more meaningful, more transformative life, we have to ask bigger questions, better questions. You know, we have to be with the questions that are being asked through us. We want an answer, but you can't live answers. You can integrate answers and they become part of you. But once the search is done, you're no longer moving towards that question, if that makes sense. So I invite you through the experience I had to explore, what do you wish or pray or want an answer to right now, yet you're not living every aspect of the inquiry to find that answer? Now, I can think of so many examples for people in their life circumstances where they get a hint. You need to do this. You need to say this. You need to start this. You need to end this. You need to mention this. You need to have this conversation. You need to heal this. You need to explore this. Look for where you have friction, where you have tension, the relationships that feel a bit constrictive. Are you living the questions? Are you living the questions? Man, that was a deep one for me. Way to go, ayahuasca. Hardest frickin' journey, but man, that was one of the main pieces of gold I got from it. The second one, which I got really hit with, was who's leading you? Like, who's leading you? You stop leading yourself. You stop leading your business. You stop leading your direction. It's amazing how much that correlates to the first one, which is you want more answers, but you don't live the questions. And you don't live what we've already told you. You don't integrate the answers we give you, and then you want more answers? Like, nah, ain't happening. But really, this recognition that I was not leading myself anymore. And, you know, I look back and I think, well, there's probably a high correlation to when we stop leading ourselves is to when we experience what we would see for ourselves as some form of trauma or challenge or grief. And all of those could be under the same umbrella, a loss, a true psychological strain, a harm, a fracture, a betrayal, right? It doesn't matter how the outside world defines it, but for you and for me, the last 3 years have been really hard. I mean, you know that. You listen to the podcast. And so being able to recognize that when things got hard, I actually started to disappear from myself, which is, you know, self-erasure, like removing myself from my own experience, actually starting to go to other people to ask for advice on where to direct my life. And again, this is not the minimization of the need for really powerful information gathering, living those questions and seeking guides and seeking information. But that I myself was not co-piloting, co-creating that. That there was a knowing within me where I should go, but I was going to other people and giving them authority, not literally, but actually through the behavior, giving them authority about what I should choose when there was a deeper knowing of what I should be doing and choosing and being and stepping towards. And so I'm in this search of getting answers, but really that's just making it so I don't have to act. And that could be self-preservation. That can be preservation. But when it is time to act, we must. And so when I got that back, like, who's leading you? I'm like, man, do I lead myself in my relationship, in my family, as a father, as a leader, as someone who shares their thoughts, feelings, opinions? Am I stepping in fully to the leadership that is available to me in every area of my life, which means stepping into being an adult, which means stepping into being a man? And I'm like, nah, I haven't. So that one hit me too. That journey was really hard, but in hindsight, it was actually the one where I garnered so much, I would say, of the most wisdom. I did Wild Garlic then on the Wednesday, so that experience was the Tuesday night. The Wednesday I did Wild Garlic, went to bed. Thursday was the night of the final journey. And before I got to the moment to decide whether I was doing it, I got to tell you, I always knew I was doing it. Because if there's one characteristic I have that has really propelled my life, it is that if something is hard, I can't not do it. Like hiking, I got to go to the ends. I got to do the hardest. I love doing the hardest mountain. I love doing the hardest climbs. I love really challenging myself and my body. And this felt like a similar challenge that if I didn't say yes to the last one, I would have regretted. I knew that. And so there was a knowing that I just had to, I guess, psychologically get to the place where I was in a yes in every aspect of myself. And so I had to navigate a few things before I got there. But one thing I thought was, like, my wife had given me this journal, this beautiful journal with a picture of her and my son in the front cover. Man, it makes me emotional to think about. And on it, she had written, and the front page below the picture, "May your roots grow deep and your wings wide." In the first journey, the commitment I had made was like, I'm going to see this through. And I'm going to see this through. And what's going to propel me through is the love I have for my son and my wife. And so I let that carry me. Like, in the first journey, I saw them both so much. In the second journey, I saw them both so much. And, you know, it was really interesting because, well, I forgot to even share this. I forgot that this happened. But in the second journey, while things were like at their darkest, I remember seeing my wife overseeing everything, being like, you can trust it, like, let yourself go into it. I've got you. And I was feeling scared, like, oh, well, is Jasper okay? Like, you know, I don't want anything in the spiritual realms to happen to him. And I just saw her sort of like put her behind him, like how you would protect someone or a kid, and said, I've got him. You're free to explore. You don't have to worry about us. And when I knew that, when I told her that, she'd be like kind of laughing, because I thought, oh, yeah, of course, my wife in the spiritual realms is like a freaking massive shamanic force. But on the last journey, I'm so happy I said yes to it, because it was so beautiful. And it's hard to put into words, but it was like this experience of everything, like that movie, Everything All at Once. But it was really this experience of other realms, other beings, other everything. You know, I would close my eyes in the hut we were in. And it's interesting because after I drank the medicine, it probably took about an hour for it to kick in. And I remember thinking, phew, like, I guess this is my experience. I'm not meant to have one this time. Like, I could hear other people already in it. And then it started to hit me. And I could just feel my body being like flying through places. And when I would close my eyes, what normally, you know, with my eyes open would be the thatched roof. But with my eyes closed, there was this whole other world happening beyond the veil. And it was just this profound experience of interacting with other beings and feeling the love and the care and the maybe being watched over. And in that, I really saw my wife and my son, and that was very touching. Just seeing that bond is so sacred, that even in another realm, there's just such deep love for one another. And I wouldn't have known this before I was a parent. And if you're a parent, I'm sure you can understand. Was that the love for my son was just so profound, like hard to put into words, just like so beautiful. And so that last one was just this, it was incredible. And when I came out of that, I just saw how each journey was such the perfect arc, and each wild garlic ceremony was the perfect arc, and each day in Peru was the perfect day, and all the experiences I had. You know, I remember thinking when I didn't want to do the last one, like, is this what I do? Like, when things get tough, do I quit? Like, is this indicative of how I show up? And there was answers in there that were like, yeah, that's true sometimes. And if it's true sometimes, it's going to be true a lot. Because if we can't fully step towards all these spaces, like when things get tough, then are we really at our maximum in every area? I would argue no, because you can't turn down yourself 10% in one place or 70 or 100% in one place and expect to be at 100 in another. That's not how it works, because you're missing access to your relational self, your meaning, purpose self, your health, wellness self, your spiritual self, these aspects of self that require us fully moving into the edges of them. So when I look back, what were some of the key learnings, or like the best parts of being in Peru? One was I met really incredible people who were on that journey too, that Brandon brought together. Just incredible people that I will forever be connected to. And that feels really beautiful. I'm always reminded of, through following these scary, courageous leaps, that you are brought into community with people who are taking courageous, brave, scary leaps. And those are the kind of people that we want to spend time with, because they remind us that life is worth living, that edges are worth walking, you know, that really the beauty is found in the unknown and in balancing between the known and unknown, not just living in the known, which ends up, you know, creating a certain life. But as Tony Robbins would say, we all actually have a requirement for some uncertainty. And I think when we don't tap into known potential that's gnawing at us, there is a grief that comes with that, a depression and anxiety, because we're not answering, we're not listening, you know, we're not eating everything on the plate, we're not integrating all the answers we have. So that's one of them. The second is actually how beautiful the world is. not engaged in technology. And I know that's ironic because we're like engaged in technology as you listen to this. And so I really acknowledge the beauty of what it has done for my life and how it has connected you and I and so many people. I've met my wife through technology. Like, there's so many beautiful aspects of it. And what I will say is that I am part of one of the last generations that will know life before and after the internet, and especially before and after smartphones, which I think are going to be a massive delineation in mental health, before and after. And what I will say is that those 6 days spent with no technology, what I experienced was things I experienced as a child, which we would sit around that room where we all did medicine at night, but we would sit around that on hammocks and sing and speak and share and connect. And that was happening throughout the days all the time. You'd be reading your book and someone would come in and you'd start talking about maybe what you were reading or what they're going through. There was just so much time to be with one another. No one was lost in their phones or their technology. Instead, they were lost in one another, and that was really beautiful. I found that to be a very important reminder that I needed of what is possible creatively, relationally, when we make that a priority over technology, which used to not be a choice. It just was, and now it is a choice. And I think like any tool, we just have to choose how we use them so they don't use us. So yeah, it was amazing. And it was everything that I could have wished for. And I'm so happy I was supported in navigating that. And I'll make sure that I link out in the show notes the journal, Brandon's website for his warrior retreats. And I really want to express my gratitude to you for just being part of the community that I get to experience, for trusting me with the things that you want to learn about and talk about. And that I don't take any of that lightly. I have such immense gratitude that I get to be on a microphone in someone's ear and also get to be in someone's experience in their life. That really means so much to me. And one way that would be a great support for the podcast is to share this episode with anyone who you think it might resonate with, and maybe just aspects of it, of maybe some of my learnings, and also to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Sending you big love and again, much gratitude.